Okay. So, you can turn in your homework over there. Sometime before you leave class, turn your homework in. And the handout is my solution to the test. Like the first test, I made three versions of the test. Changed the numbers. I went ahead and made copies this time. I graded number one. I still need to grade number two. There's a lot of A's on number one. Some people made mistakes, some more serious than others on number one. But generally, I give partial credit. As long as you have something that's relevant and true to say. We're doing today some more gradient stuff. This is a little polynomial. X squared times y plus x times y minus x to the fourth minus y to the fourth. And I got Wolf and Ralph to graph it for me here. It has two what we call local maximums, tops of little hills. There's one here and there's another one over there. We can also see the same thing in a contour plot. Somewhere around here is the top of a little hill, and then there's the top of another hill over there. Wolfram Alpha even can tell me about that kind of thing. I think I scroll way down, maybe. Well, it tells me about one of them, the global maximum. That must be the top of the higher of those two hills. It says that the highest it gets is about 0.36, and that happens near x about 0.76 and y about 0.69. So that would be, I guess, that one. I have it somewhere around here. And the other one, it's somewhere around here, although Wolfram-Ralph isn't telling me where it is. But I can actually find that maximum. I can find the location of it. I can find the location of the other one without using anything like Wolfram-Ralph's fancy software. I can just do it in an Excel spreadsheet. All right? How would I find these two local maxima? Method called gradient ascent. Okay. So let me bring the screen up to you. Tell you a little bit about the idea behind it. I mentioned it a little bit last time. We have a function of two variables, so two inputs. The gradient is a two-dimensional vector, and it points in the direction of the steepest increase of x, the point on the surface with the steepest slope. So our idea is we make a little guess about where the global maximum is. It doesn't even have to be a great guess. And then we follow the gradient to another point. Now, the idea is you, at your particular point where you made a guess, you compute the gradient. And then you just use the gradient to move to a new position. And sometimes if you try this, you'll find that actually the gradient bounces around too much. That if you follow these arrows, it's unstable. You might even go off to infinity. So sometimes you have to multiply this by a number to make the arrow shorter. So usually the problem is the gradient arrow is too long, it's too big, so you need to shorten it up. So you have some positive number. It could be smallish. I found that for this particular example, 0.1 is going to work to make the arrow not too long. Get some kind of control on it. Alright, and then you recompute the gradient. So maybe here we have our new point. Right? And then we recompute the gradient, so we get another arrow. Since we move to a new point, the gradient may have changed. And now we get to our third point. And then we could compute the gradient at that point and get a fourth point. And then we could compute the gradient there. And the hope is that the arrows will get shorter and shorter. Maybe we multiply each arrow by that same epsilon. I'm starting to run out of my box here. The box bigger, right? So the hope is that we'll just follow these arrows and that the arrows will get shorter and shorter. And then eventually so short we can't even see it anymore. And that will stabilize at a local max. A local maximum. We hope if we would take the limit of this sequence that it'll exist, right? We're not going to actually compute the whole thing, are we, right? We're not going to do this forever. We're just going to compute, I don't know, 10, 100, you know, whatever it takes, whatever is reasonable for the accuracy we want. That's the hope. Okay. And to describe this thing of starting at a point, adding an arrow, how could we describe this algebraically? So we had to guess the very first one. And then to get a new one, in terms of, think of it as a position vector for the moment. The new point's position vector is the old point's position vector plus a regulating scale factor epsilon that we'll pick times the gradient arrow. And let's remember the components of the gradient arrow, right? That's the x partial derivative in the x component, and the y component is the y partial derivative. So that's the theory behind it. Okay. So for our example, I'm going to start at, say, this. Let's start at a positive one. Start at 1, 0. I could try starting at 0, 0, except that if the gradient comes out 0, you're stuck. You don't go anywhere. So I tried 0, 0 initially. It doesn't work because the gradient is 0 and you don't go anywhere. But you're not at a local maximum if you plug in 0, 0. Sorry. Okay, so here's that function that I had the alpha web app graph. And let's get some partial derivatives on this thing. So the x partial derivative would be, let's see, 2xy plus y minus 4x cubed. The y to the fourth is constant when we're holding y constant, so its derivative is 0. And then here's our y partial derivative. Okay, so we're holding x constant, so x squared is a constant multiple of y. That's just derivative x squared. x.
The derivative of the negative x fourth with respect to y is 0. And then a minus 4y cubed. How do we get the partial derivatives?
And I found, you know, like trial and error that 0.1 is reasonable. You don't want to pick epsilon to be super small because then your arrows will be too short and it'll take you forever to get close to the local max. You don't want the epsilon to be too big, or you might just zip around, you might oscillate too much, or you might go off to infinity. So we'll demonstrate that. But this is the theory behind it, and this theory will generalize to any function, not just our polynomial. Any questions? Set up here. Okay, let's see if we can implement it in a spreadsheet then. I made a spreadsheet in advance, but I think you'd find it more instructive to see me prepare one from scratch. See all the formulas I enter here. Okay. So, I have some labels. So, N for... So, the stuff I'm typing in now... Not much of interest. Right, like this stuff in text, just Excel's not going to do anything with that. Now the real work will be here. I'm going to compute the value of f at this point, 1, 0. I want to actually see the values of f increase, so I can figure out what the local maximum is. Have the z value, not just x and y values. Okay, so let's remember the formula. So it was x, which is over here, squared, so caret 2 asterisks for times, and then click on the y cell there, or I could type in c2, because it's cell c2. Mm-hmm. And then we keep going, so we need plus x times y minus x to the fourth minus y to the fourth. Comes out -1. Okay. And let's get the x partial derivative. So that was 2 times x times y minus, let's see, it was xy, so the x partial derivative of that term was y, and then minus 4 times x cubed. So the x partial derivative is -4 at our starting point, where x is 1 and y is 0. And we need the y partial derivative. So every time I do a formula in an Excel cell, I start it with an equals sign. You'll notice that. So equals, and then the y partial derivative is what I need next. So it was x squared y. So x squared is the y partial derivative of the x squared y term. The y partial derivative of the x term was just x, right? xy. It's y partial derivative of x, and then that x to the fourth has 0 y partial derivative, and the y to the fourth had partial derivative -4 times y cubed, right? Because it was a negative y to the fourth term. Okay, so I've just typed in the formulas in the board into just Excel formulas, right? Okay, so the y partial derivative is 2, if I computed things right. See here. I think I have. All right, so let's see what happens. Well, now I need to implement the formula that gives me that update rule. Right. So I said This is just a label epsilon, so I'm going to put in a 0.1 here for the epsilon. So I said we were going to take, for the new x, we're going to have the old x, and then we're going to add to it that epsilon times the x component of the gradient. So that's just times the x partial derivative. So this will be our new x, 0.6. Let's see what our new y is going to be. So we're going to take the old y plus that epsilon factor times the y component of the gradient, which is the y partial derivative. So our new y is going to be 0.2. And if I want to keep track of how many times I'm doing this, I can have this little counter here. So I'm just going to have this be equal to the old counter value plus 1. Right? So, okay. And then this code here for computing f and its partial derivatives and the choice I made for epsilon, I'm just going to copy and paste that code. Right? So now at the new x of 0.6 and the new y of 0.2, now the value of f has gone up from negative 1 to 0.06. So maybe we're going up towards a local maximum. And the new x partial derivative, which we're going to need for the next step, is negative 0.8. The new y partial derivative is 0.9. I'm just going to keep epsilon the same throughout for simplicity. Okay, now all the formulas here, they're all relative. Right? Like this formula, say here, it's really a relative formula. It's interpreted as do something, take the cell above me, add to that the product of the cell 4 to the above me, one row, and 4 to the right, and the cell above me, one row, and 4 to the left. So it's all relative. So I'm going to just... I can just copy-paste this whole row. And look. And then say if I look at one of these cells, like this one, it got updated, right? It was one row lower, so the stuff that used to refer to row 2 now refers to row 3. Oops. If you don't put in the dollar signs in your Excel formulas, all the references are relative. Okay, so why stop there? All right, let's just repeat this a whole bunch of times. However much we want. Okay. Let's see what's going on here. Okay. So, hopefully I didn't make any horrible errors. Okay. I do see... Okay. Yes, doesn't look right. The F values are not... I see. Okay, I see a little error there. Yep. I've put in slightly the wrong formula for the... No, that's right. 2xy. Yeah, yes, there's a little sign here. 2xy... plus y minus 4x cubed. Okay, well. Okay, so. Let's fix that. And see if life got any better. Yes. Yes, we're converging now. Okay, so I had a little error there. But now it's fixed. Let me reduce the number of decimal places we're seeing here. So this is a little easier to read. Okay. I hit Control 1 to go to the formatting thing. So let's do 2 decimal places. Okay, well, we can have maybe... one more decimal place. Maybe one. Okay, that's still legible. Okay. So So we repeat this pattern of following the gradient, and yes, it really does converge to something. It takes a while, but it's converging. All right. So at each step, we use the gradient multiplied by a 0.1 factor to tell us how to move to a new point. And you see that the numbers here are changing, but there were big changes at first. Now the changes are getting pretty smaller. You scroll down some more. Things have stabilized. To here, it looks like things have stabilized to 4 decimal places. Somewhere around 30 iterations, it's stabilized even to the 4th decimal place. And yeah, even 100 iterations later, the 4th decimal place in X and Y here still hasn't changed. And the Z value, right, the value of F at these points also converged and stopped changing. Even after about 20 iterations, the actual local maximum, that height, the Z value stopped changing as well, at least to the 4th decimal place. So just about 20 iterations here gets you that the local maximum is 0.3627. And if you want to know the location of that local maximum, well, we had to wait a little bit longer for, say, 4 decimal places of the location to stabilize. But around 30, we see that it has stabilized at an X of 0.758 and a Y of 0.6934. So this many decimal places, things stabilized. And you'll notice that the partial derivatives got really small. And that makes sense because if you're near the top of the hill, it's flattening out at the top. So the slopes are pretty shallow. Right, your x slope and your y slope are pretty small. If you're at the very top of the hill, the x slope and the y slope would both be zero. Talk about that tomorrow, because that's how you can find the exact location with formulas for simpler functions. The formulas are too complicated for this one, but for simpler functions, you can actually find the exact location by looking for where the x and y slopes are zero. Okay, so this worked great. Well, I mean, if I hadn't had the spreadsheet to help me, if I'd had to do all this calculation 20 times on my calculator or 30 times to get these, and I might have got impatient. Maybe I could write a program on my calculator if I'm so inclined to speed it up. Looks like the spreadsheet. I'll put the spreadsheet on the website, of course. Well, what would happen if I had made the epsilon not so small? What if I made it just 1? Okay. Disaster strikes. Basically what happens is that we weren't so far off from the top of the hill when we were at 1, 0. But then when we followed the negative 4, 2 arrow here, we went, if we just multiplied that by 1 instead of 0.1, we go off far away. Yeah, it's not a good situation. And then we follow the arrow again, and we're further away from the top of the hill, so things just got steeper, right? So these gradients just got even bigger, and they keep getting steeper. The problem is that basically we're on one side of the hill, and we want to follow this arrow that points to the top of the hill, but the problem is we're overshooting. We follow the arrow, but it's too long, so we go beyond the top of the hill and way over on the other side. And we get further away from the top of the hill than when we started. And now down here, it's even steeper. So then if we ask the gradient what to do, well, now it's even steeper, so the gradient gives us an even bigger arrow. So now we go back all the way over the hill, but now we go even further. And so we're even further from the top of the hill, back on the side where we started, but we're even further down, and it's even steeper now. So then we ask the gradient what to do, and we get an even bigger arrow. And it sends us, and we follow it, and it sends us too far over the top of the hill, and even further than the last time on this side. So we're way, way further now. It's even steeper, because with this particular function, as you get further away from the top of the hill, it just keeps getting steeper. So then we have this feedback process where we keep getting bigger and bigger gradients because we keep overshooting. We follow the arrow in the right direction, but we go too far. We go over the top of the hill the other side, and then we keep going back. And so you can see that happening here with these X's and Y's. Whew. Yeah, see, they alternate between positive and negative, and they keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Disaster. So that's why I needed to multiply it by the by that 0.1, so that I wouldn't get into that mess to start with. What if I had only made it 0.5? Well, then I still end up doing this oscillation and getting bigger and bigger numbers. So that's not small enough. How about 0.3? Okay, 0.3 is small enough that things work out. And as far as the x value is concerned, we still seem to converge about, sorry, not x value, z values right here. We seem to converge about as fast, maybe even faster. But it turns out, if you look at the x and y values, you can see there's oscillation. Like we go up and down between, say, 0.6 something and 0.8 something here, similar of the y values. So this is us overshooting again, going, we're following the arrow towards the top of the hill, but we go a little bit too far, and then we have to go back. It's not so bad that we're spiraling away to infinity this time, at least I hope not. Well, maybe it is. I think we, this might get worse and worse just very slowly. I'm not sure, but we seem to see it's the x and y values are not settling down. Things seem to be getting worse, and even those z values, they were good here, but now they're starting to get problematic as well, because we're getting bigger and bigger oscillations. So we're getting further from the top of the hill, and these z values are lower. So 0.3 was not quite small enough. Maybe 0.2. But, okay. 0.2 looks like it's small enough. We seem to be stabilizing. Okay. In fact, 0.2 actually makes you stabilize sooner. The z value is about right to 4 decimal places after just 10 iterations. Instead of 20, and after, say, even 15 iterations, well, maybe not 15, but certainly 16 or 20 iterations instead of 30, like the old one, we've already got the x and y values there. So if you make this scale factor epsilon as big as you can get away with, you'll converge to the solution faster, right? So 0.1 works, but it's not the fastest way. 0.2 is faster convergence. But 0.3, too big, right? So there's a sweet spot of fastest convergence without this whole thing blowing up and destabilizing. But it's not easy to say where that sweet spot is. So if you can find an epsilon that's small enough to work without it taking forever to converge, I'm willing to copy paste 100 rows in Excel, but I don't want to do 1,000 rows, And you're good to go. All right. Now let me do another modification. What if we started at a different point here? Instead of a positive 1, I'm just going to change this to a negative 1. So we're going to start at, instead of 1, 0, negative 1, 0. And this will actually get me to the other local maximum that Wolfram Alpha didn't give us numbers for, but we could see in the graph. Okay, so from this other starting point, negative 1, 0, the convergence rate is a little slower, but we But we still get there using, say, an epsilon of 0.1. Right? After enough time, however many iterations, where is this? Seems to be stable after about 100 iterations. At x equals negative 0.32 something and y equals negative 0.37 something, we have z equal to 0.05 something. That's lower than the 0.36 we had before. See, before we had the 0.36, this other local maximum in a different position is a little bit lower, 0.05. And then we can see that in Wolfram Alpha. Right? There is the higher peak at here around 0.36 for the z value, and then the lower peak is apparently around 0.05 for the z value. So that would be, so if one of them is around here and the other was around here. And now we found locations for both of them using this gradient method. So if we want to summarize both of these, one option would just be to make a copy of this sheet. Okay. Well, I tried. Anyways, let me just select everything. I can have a new one over here. So maybe in the second sheet, it'll be the one that starts at negative 1. And in the first sheet, I can change it back to start at positive 1. I can have two sheets. And I'll save it to the desktop. Mm-hmm. Okay. Generalizes. What if we had a function of three variables? You can't graph a function of three variables very well. Right? It would be like every point in the room is an input point, and the output is, I don't know, we'd have to color code it or something. So you imagine every point in the room is colored, a different color. And I guess you'd have to walk through and look at the color of what's right in front of you to see something. Uh-huh. We could have a bunch of nested cross sections, maybe level surfaces of the different output values, be different surfaces. Hard to see, but everything can generalize. So can the stuff from last time. Okay, so the x component is the x partial derivative. The y component is the y partial derivative. Okay, well now the z component is the z partial derivative. Right. So I can do stuff now where here's a how I would generalize gradient ascent, right? Now I'd have three input point coordinates, right? And to get the new one, I would have to follow a 3D arrow. Another thing we did last time was... Last time we did two things, directional derivatives, right? So for a 3D unit vector V, right, we can talk about the directional derivative of F when F has three-dimensional inputs. Well, it'll just be the 3D gradient dot product with that unit vector V. Right? Again, this works if F is differentiable. If you have some weird counterexample function, then bad. What does it mean for F to be differentiable when it's a function of three variables? You have to generalize the two-dimensional input definition. So one way to express it would be like this. You would compute your x partial derivatives, and these would be think of them as x, y, and z slopes now. And there'd be some small errors in your slopes if you wanted to compare the actual changes in output. But it would just be the two-dimensional version with one more term. And this works if the little changes are small. Everything generalizes. Even these kind of abstract concepts like differentiability. I can't draw a picture like saying it means it has a tangent plane. It would be more like it has a tangent hyperplane. What else could we talk about that goes to 3D? Yesterday we talked about finding the tangent line to a level curve. So that has a 3D generalization of finding a tangent plane. Okay. So you have some level curve like this, some constant. And if you set your function of two variables equal to a constant, and then you have some point on there, a, b, right? Then you get a tangent line, and your gradient is perpendicular. Okay? And that allowed us to find an equation for the tangent line. Well, now, we can have a tangent plane, but to an implicitly defined surface. Okay? So this surface doesn't even have to pass the vertical line test, but it can still have tangent planes. Okay, so imagine there's the curved surface underneath it, and then there's I'm putting the tangent plane on top. So now we have some other constant here. What's the next letter? D. And we have some point A, B, C. And we feed as an input, and the output is D. And you can ask, what is the surface of all the 3D inputs that also produce output D? And in general, that's curved. If it has a tangent plane, then just like here, we can have
the gradient vector be perpendicular to it, and thus find an equation
for the tangent plane.
Everything generalizes to higher dimensions. You can even have functions of 4 and 5 variables, right? But then you'll have tangent hyperplanes or whatever. I can't draw those. So let's see an example of this. So now, so f of x, y, b. Plus 2 over y plus 3 over z. If you plug in 3, 6, 9 for x, y, z, you get output of a third plus a third plus a third, which is 1. Yeah, I rigged the numbers to be nice. What about the gradient? Use a power rule. Think of this as x to the minus 1. So the x partial derivative is going to be just the derivative of the 1 over x, and then the other terms will be held constant. So you'll get x to the minus 1 will have derivative negative x to the minus 2 by the power rule. Other terms will be held constant. Take the y partial derivative. 1 over x is held constant. The 2 over y, think of it as 2 times y to the minus 1. So with the power rule, you'll get a negative 2 times y to the minus 2. And then that z term, we're holding constant. And then we take the z partial derivative. So those x and y terms will have constants derivatives of 0. And then 3 over z. Well, that's 3 times z to the minus 1. So by the power rule, that has derivative 3 times negative 1 times z to the minus 2. In particular, we could ask, what is the gradient at our point, 3, 6, 9. I'll just plug in 3, 6, and 9. So you'll get negative 1 ninth from squaring the 3, negative 2 over 36 from squaring the 6, and negative 3 over 81 from squaring the 9. Okay. Now, if you're on this plane, right. And this is similar to test question number 1, isn't it, right? We've got to find an equation for a plane, right? You imagine some other point on the plane, right? X, Y, Z, right? You make an arrow from A, B, C to X, Y, Z on the plane, not on the curved surface, but on the plane now. And that arrow is perpendicular to the gradient. So if ABC is 3, 6, 9, then this arrow will be x minus 3, comma, y minus 6, comma, z minus 9. So let's put some words here to give that context. So we're on the tangent plane for the surface defined by what? Defined by an output of 1. So 1 over x plus 2 over y plus 3 over z equals 1. So this is a curved surface, and at the point where x, y, z is equal to 3, 6, 9, the surface is approximated by a plane described by this. And this, of course, is just going to be a dot product of 0. Right? That's our algebraic version of perpendicular. Questions or comments? This is an example of where the vectors really help, because with the vector notation, it was very easy to generalize to one higher dimension. And you could see how to continue these patterns into any number of dimensions. Grade number 1 so far. But you can see my solutions over there now and hand up. I'll give you a little homework problem here. Let's see. I'll give you a gradient ascent problem. And I'll give you a tangent plane problem. And make sure to turn in the old homework, 19 through 23 over there before you leave. It's where the same place as the test solution handouts are. Okay, so number one. Estimate the location of a local maximum of the sine of x times y plus the cosine x squared using gradient ascent. Find an equation for the plane tangent to x to the fourth plus y to the fourth plus z to the fourth equals 1 at x, y, z equals
make sure I'm actually giving you a valid point here.
It's not quite so symmetrical and uninteresting there. Not so obvious what the answer is now.